Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1:17 p.m. and today is November 18th. Well, if we look at the S&P 500, it was down about 1% and pausing in the region of the upper side of this range that's been forming since the beginning of September. There is some reticence to pay for new all-time highs when there are rising number of cases and the potential that we're going to see some additional lockdowns in various parts of the USA. However, it's extremely unlikely that there's going to be a nationwide lockdown in the US as long as the Trump administration is in power. So that delays any kind of decision for at least the next couple of months. When we then think about the performance of small caps and mid caps, well, it's a little different. They have already traded out to new highs. And at there is a short-term overbought condition, so we may see some consolidation. But the fact that they are at new highs and have been outperforming, I think that is one of the clearest signals yet that we are seeing some transition here, that there is less focus on the stay-at-home champions, which are significant weights within the NASDAQ, and the NASDAQ looks like it will pull back further from the upper side of its range. Now, the big consideration, of course, is that the stay-at-home champions are mega caps. Apple still has a market cap of in excess of $2 trillion, although following today's decline, only just. And the bigger question is, how long is that likely to remain the case? We had a very significant acceleration, and accelerations are trend-ending characteristics. Even when we look at the logarithmic scale chart, this was an accelerated trend. And I think perhaps more important than that is the broad consistency of Apple's trend over the course of the last decade. It has been prone to these accelerated moves, but each one of those has been followed by a really rather lengthy period of consolidation that can last anything up to 2 years. And each one of those has pulled back to the region of the 1,000-day moving average. Well, to get to the moving average from where the price is right now would require a halving. The other point is that the acceleration that we saw up to the peak at the beginning of 2020 did not pull all the way back to the 1,000-day moving average. However, it did find support in the region of the previous peak. And each one of those reversions to the 1,000-day moving average have found support in the region of the previous peak. Therefore, the primary trend characteristic for Apple is not so much that it accelerated or that it is pulling back, but rather that in the event that it does fail in this area, that it should subsequently find support in the region of $80. If it fails at that level, then it's likely to come back and test the 1,000-day moving average. And if it fails at that level, well then the consistency of the more than decade-long trend is shot. And considering that Apple has been the best performing company overall in terms of its size and the fact that it went from $3 to $120 over the course of the last 12 years, it's a totem of this technology-led bull market. And it did spectacularly well following the lockdowns. And it's going to be difficult to repeat that growth. The big challenge with introducing 5G phones is that even Apple itself is saying that the majority of the functionality is going to be for the corporate sector. Well, that's not a mass market product. And I think a lot of people have been waiting to buy a new 5G phone. But when Apple doesn't supply a charger or the earphones that it has with every other handset that it has manufactured, well, that leaves a bitter taste in people's mouths. And I think that, in fact, it's been one of the reasons why I've delayed buying the new phone. I just feel like I'm getting ripped off by Apple, and I don't really need a new phone. And I think that the $1,000 price point is rather aggressive, that I can buy a new laptop that I can work off of for a few years for about $1,500. Why would I need to pay all of that money for a phone that I really only use for just the occasional app or two? I'm not a big phone user, and I suspect that there are a lot of people that are in exactly the same boat. So then how are they going to grow earnings without the tailwind of a very significant stay-at-home model? Well, of course, stock markets at the moment are pricing in the potential that we may have an additional kick to this stay-at-home model. But nobody really believes that it's going to last. Obviously, there are a lot of people that are still irrational about this whole coronavirus scare, and I continue to think that we're already well past the peak of coronavirus hysteria. When you have thousands of people protesting about lockdown measures in a relatively staid country like Germany, and water cannons being turned upon them, well, that has got to tell us that we are coming towards the end of this, the enforcement of social distancing, because otherwise we're going to have revolutionary, sentiments starting to rise. And if people were willing to, our governments were willing to buy off left-wing revolutionaries, they'll be equally willing to buy off right-wing revolutionaries. The number one buzzword for 2021 is likely to be reflation. And that means there's going to be a lot of money printed. And the willingness of governments to continue to run deficits is a very significant factor. Treasury yields were a little bit stronger in here today, despite the fact that the stock market was weaker. And this, I think, is also just this big question that we just don't have a real answer for, is what are the governments going to do considering the quantity of debt that has accumulated? And what are central banks going to do to try and ease the pain for governments in terms of the interest expense on all of that debt? We still don't have a clear answer how on earth the economy is going to deal with a steeper yield curve. Now, the yield curve spread is still around the 70 basis point level. It did pop on the upside earlier in the week, and it has come back down again. And there's still scope that it could pull back further. And certainly over the course of the last 6 months, every time it's got up towards that 70 basis point level, it has failed. As long as yield curve spreads are contained, then that's likely to represent a very stimulative environment overall. But even if yield curves expand, then it's particularly beneficial for banks. And then if banks are told by governments to go out and lend money and to be aggressive in that lending and that they will be backstopped in their credit decisions, well, then that is where inflationary pressures could arise from. What I find particularly interesting right now is that gold prices have been really very stable. They've been down a bit in here today and coming back down towards the lower side of the range. Now, this kind of very inert trading does not last. So we've seen a number of downward dynamics over the course of the last 4 months, and the most recent was 2 weeks ago. And we kind of have to give the benefit of the doubt to the most recent dynamic. So there are still pressures here, and it could yet come back down again and close that overextension relative to the trend mean and potentially overshoot on the downside. The reality is that gold tends to overshoot on both the upside and the downside. So it's something that we have to be prepared to consider. And when we think about gold shares, well, It's one of the sectors where we have the greatest potential for dividend growth because the longer that prices in the region of $1,900 are sustained, the greater that the money that will accrue on the balance sheets of gold miners. And yet the sector has come all the way back down to test the region of the trend mean over the course of the last couple of weeks. I do think that we are being set up for the next buying opportunity, but we don't have evidence yet that the lows are in fact in. Now, when we start to think about what else is likely to do well, when we think about what is happening in terms of the timelines for outlawing the sale of internal combustion engines, well, that's really quite beneficial for copper. And copper prices were also a little weaker in here today. So what people are willing to bet is that we're going to have a little deflationary spike in the short term before we get clear economic reflationary pressures coming through when vaccines are in fact approved for sale next year. Pfizer has said that they're going to go for approval in the next couple of weeks. Now, Pfizer is constrained by the fact that they need ridiculously cold temperatures to transport their vaccine, and it doesn't survive particularly long outside of that very cold environment before it can be used. So the rollout of that vaccine will take time, and I think that's probably what's weighing on the share, whereas Moderna's is the one that doesn't need the extra cold temperatures. But then we have a clear potential that other vaccine candidates are also going to be approved. And the ones that are coming out later don't depend on RNA. And because of that, they can be scaled faster. It really does mean that the most vulnerable people in society will have access to a vaccine in the near term, within the next 6 months. And then once that has been achieved, then the rationale for continued social distancing becomes much less compelling. And at least then that schools can reopen. I know that in much of the USA, schools are open, but they're certainly not open in Los Angeles. And that is really exerting an enormous psychological toll on children. And that kind of experience is visceral in nature, and it's going to take time to overcome. But the way to overcome it will be lots and lots of social interaction. And I'm fully convinced that there is a lot of pent-up demand for social interaction. Now, when we then think about what are we likely to see next year with this potential for clear reflation, well, we're already seeing that industrial resources are really starting to fire now, and the LME Metals Index has clearly broken its sequence of lower rally highs. Even when we think about the fact that lead-acid batteries will become a thing of the past or much less demand for them, the lead price is firming from the lower side of its range and has rebounded from the trend mean over the last few weeks. I thought that the lithium carbonate price is something that was particularly interesting today. It reached a peak in 2017 and 16 and 17 following the initial demand for electric vehicle batteries. And then there was a significant amount of investment in additional supply, and it overwhelmed the failure of the initial forecasts for demand for electric vehicles to take off. And the price came all the way back down. Well, the price has now pushed back above the trend mean for the first time since the peak. And there are a number of the lithium companies have mirrored that steep advance and subsequent steep decline. And for example, Orocobre is a pure play on lithium, and it is firming from the region of the trend mean. If lithium prices continue to advance, I would expect that Orocobre would do the same. Livent was spun off from FMC, so it's also a pure play on lithium, and it pushed on to new recovery highs in here over the last couple of weeks. It did post a downside key reversal today, however, so there is potential now that we are going to see some consolidation of this impressive advance over the course of the last few weeks. And then Albemarle, despite the fact that it is it only derives about 35% of its revenue from the lithium market, it's the biggest producer of lithium, and the share has rallied really very impressively over the last 3 weeks and is equally subject to some pause and consolidation. These last two companies have been outperforming the lithium price, and they probably now require lithium prices to play catch up in order to justify the current price environment. Then when we look at the wider industrial resources sector, Rio Tinto has positioned itself rather well as a green miner, whatever that means, and the price has now rebounded from the region of the trend mean. I think there is the clear potential that we are moving into a new commodity-led bull market. If we just simply look at an unweighted commodity index like the CCI, it has clearly broken up and out of this short-term range. And this breaking out of a 3 to 4 month range is a very similar characteristic. There is a massive number of instruments exhibit this exact same phenomenon. But what's particularly interesting is that the leader, which was Wall Street, is not doing this other than among the small caps and mid caps. Whereas when we look at a broad European index, then it's a good example of this exact phenomenon, just a 4 month range and then a clear break higher. It's exactly the same for the majority of Australian indices, and then we have exactly the same kind of activity for a number of emerging markets. So for example, Malaysia has pushed up and out, just about out of its recent range. The Indonesian market is also just beginning to push up and out of its range. And this kind of commonality is very much tied to the potential for recovery. When we think about industrials overall, they have really been through the ringer over the course of the last few years. And then, of course, Boeing had the additional pressure of its planes falling out of the sky. But they are now looking at recertifying the 737 MAX. The share was in negative territory today, and I think investors will be wanting to see how robust demand is for the plane. But it's quite likely that we're going to have economic revival. Even General Electric, which has been through an incredibly difficult process of rationalization, it's also done really rather well over the course of the last 2 weeks. But I think the rubber will meet the road when we do in fact get additional stimulative action. So then there is perhaps, if we were to think about, well, those all look like bullish phenomenon. What's the negative? What's potentially likely to have a deleterious effect? Well, one could be tax selling. We've had a phenomenal rebound in stock markets, and we are now in the 18th of November. So there's probably only about 20 days left of trading for the year. And it's quite likely that there is going to be a new tax raising administration brought into power in the USA in 2021. So from an investor's perspective, from a number of conversations I've had over the course of the last few days, there's a lot of demand for people trying to lock in sales this year instead of next year. I even heard of one charity that was selling a block of land to a conservation charity, and they were willing to take a $2 million discount on a $17 million block of land if the transaction could get done in 2020, because they just don't want to take the risk in terms of what the tax implications are going to be in 2021. So when we start to think about, well, why are stock markets a little weaker in here today? Well, on the one hand, it's because we have a short-term overbought condition. But there may be the additional point that there is some tax selling going on and a willingness to take some profits now in preference to potentially taking some profits in 2021 and paying more tax on them. So that may contribute to some pause and consolidation. And it would then likely set up the next buying opportunity, because the most likely scenario is there will be a clear willingness by governments all over the world to stoke a reflationary environment in 2021. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.